Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to the Dear Family Courts podcast. My name is Lisa Welter, and I'm your co-host, along with Jen Kinesny. Today, we have a conversation with Handa Fortas. She's the founder of the House of Faith and Freedom here in Minnesota. She's been starting conversations primarily in the faith communities around intimate partner violence and how faith leaders can respond to the needs of congregational members that have been victimized through this tragedy. This is a don't miss episode, and I think you too will be inspired by the way that Handa carries herself and the way she's engaging in these very sensitive topics.
We are delighted to have our friend Handa join us today. Handa, thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So I think we'll just jump right to it. Why don't you tell us about yourself and a little bit about your journey?
Sure. So I never know how in depth to go with this question, this type of question, but really my journey is sort of I would say a two-pronged type of thing. On one hand, I grew up in a home where my dad was a pastor and a church planter, and my mom worked in Christian radio. And so my entire childhood was really saturated with the church and with service. And that was a beautiful thing growing up. I had an excellent childhood. And ministry was always something that I kind of held as an interest. And then around probably when I was in high school, I had an experience where a woman had heard my mom on the radio, and she had just left an extremely abusive marriage, and she didn't have somewhere else to go. And so she found out where my mom went to church and showed up at our church just kind of randomly on a Sunday, and sought my mom out and told her story. And she really became this part of our life that was deep and long and sustaining. We still have an ongoing relationship with her. And it was my first introduction into domestic violence and the incredibly long process that the court system is. Mm-hmm. She was going through both a criminal case against her husband, as well as termination of parental rights, as well as a divorce. It was years and years worth of support that was necessary as she went through these, you know, sort of various logistical hoops. That was very influential on me moving in college into the realm of advocacy. So I had majored in psychology, and then I interned in domestic violence legal advocacy. And during that experience, and then onward through my master's degree and continuing to work in advocacy, I just kept seeing this reoccurring theme of victims, specifically women in most of the places I worked, that had been really let down by the church. They had either been unbelieved, or they had been told to go back or to go through marriage counseling, or their experience had been very minimized. And it was killing me inside because I loved the church and because I knew that the church held such a unique role in the healing of someone because I'd watched it happen. You know, I'd played a part in it. And so that really propelled me into what I'm doing now, which is running an organization called House of Faith and Freedom. And we create training materials and resources for faith communities and specifically pastors and leadership teams on how to effectively provide advocacy to domestic violence victims.
Oh my goodness, Handa, I'm so in awe of your story. Your story is resonating with me because this is what happened to me when I stepped away from an abusive marriage and reached out to my church for help. They told me to go back. And so I think that this happens way more frequently than not. And I had never thought about how we can really steer and guide the church to think more deeply about this issue and then have great training available for the church. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting too, because the church, it does have this very unique subset of giftings outside of the gospel, or outside of sort of maybe the spiritual elements of healing that the church can bring. If there is one thing that you probably personally know, and you know, I know through the experience of working with many, many victims, it's that trauma that's so complex and long running leaves wounds that are really long running, and the healing process isn't quick, right? And no nonprofit and no government agency has the financing or the staffing to really provide that kind of long term care and support. They can't be a community, right? They're sort of like the field medicine, if you will. And so the church is this perfectly set up entity, because it's a community. It's people who are looking to do life together. And if we could step into the role of really caring about victims and survivors and offering that sort of safe, sustainable community system, that's incredible. And that's something that is really missing in the ecosystem of the advocacy world.
I would agree. I think you're being so wise in your approach. And I think you've really articulated what the need looks like too within the body of believers and what is possible. When you think about your work, Hannah, and this idea of restorative circles, you were trained in circles with Jen a while ago. What caused you to decide to add that to your portfolio when we're talking about domestic violence and this advocacy approach?
Yeah, so it's interesting, because I had met you and we had got into this conversation around restorative leadership. What does that mm-hmm. look like? How do we stop just looking at Band-Aids and start trying to create these sort of systemic shifts in culture and in the way that we lead to really bring about and facilitate kind of this more holistic, deep running type of healing? And you'd introduced me to the idea of circles, and immediately I was like, this is genius for working with domestic violence, because so much of the dynamic in a violent relationship is a power differential.
Yep.
And so mm-hmm. restorative circles are really this process that levels the playing field. It gives everyone an equitable voice, and it spends a lot of time building up a sort of like a safety barrier, right? Setting these boundary lines for what's necessary in order to share and feel safe doing so. And that's just not something that most survivors or victims have been party to in the past. They've just been run over or manipulated, or their words have been twisted. And so to give them the opportunity to have somewhere where that space is held for them to either speak or not speak is really important. So I loved it. Instantly, I was like, I must do this.
That's so good. I love what you're saying about just how this type of work, this circle work, gives that power dynamic to everyone in the group, and each person gets to exercise their right to say or not say, but is given an opportunity to hold space for their own voice. But I'm curious, when you did the training, it is naturally, when you're trained in circle, it naturally transforms you in some way when you're sitting in that circle and you're learning how it works in the process. What did it do for you personally?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think when people first hear about circles, there can be a tendency to be like, it's a talking circle. Like that's my husband. He's like, you have a talking piece that you pass around. But I don't think until you've experienced it, like actually sat in a circle, you can understand the instant degree of depth and of feeling heard that that's cultivated through that process. Every circle I've ever sat in on, and certainly through the training, you just feel like you are, in the course of 1 hour or 2 hours, way closer to these people that you didn't know before than to some of your friends that you hang out with regularly, because we just don't often create a practice of being vulnerable with one another in an intentional manner. So I think for me, it was just this realization that communication in today's world has shifted and changed to something that inherently leans towards being more shallow, or towards, like in the case of social media, just you saying whatever you want and not necessarily listening as much to what other people have to say. And so having this long form type of conversation around important topics where everyone is being equally vulnerable is powerful.
Yeah, it is really special. I'm glad you articulated it that way, because we say frequently, it's so hard to articulate what circle feels like until you've had the experience. But you did a really great job of explaining it. Tell us what you are doing. What happened over this last year now that you've had these new skills? Tell us what has been brewing and on the horizon for you.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Originally, I thought of circles in the realm of working with victims or survivors. And that is something that I'm doing with it. I'm part of a local initiative in my county that works with you guys, actually, to use restorative circles in the prevention of child abuse and neglect. And we do that in a couple of different ways, through community circles that are based on different topics like mental health or parenting skills. And then we also are about to start a group, actually, for domestic violence survivors around parenting and sort of dealing with the difficulty of becoming a single parent after you've left a very traumatic relationship. But as I've just kind of continued to mull over and really pray about how to use this tool, the thing that kept coming to mind was, how do I take this and bring it to leadership? How do we use this as a form of helping people connect with training material in a deeper and more intimate way? So instead of them just listening to me train for 5 hours, you know, maybe listen to me train for 2, and then for the additional 2-3 hours, we sit and have a facilitated conversation that helps you reflect on the information and also kind of self-inspect around, what are my innate beliefs, or where are the areas that I'm skeptical, or how would I apply some of this in a real life situation? And I think that, how do I say this? I'm never going to convince someone to change their position on something, right? Like, if they have a very set idea of what they think abuse is or the right response to abuse is, it's hard for me to challenge that and say, you've been doing it wrong, you need to do it this way. But if we can sort of change the posture that someone has, a leader has, to being one of humbleness and a willingness to listen and to hear other perspectives, and sort of take that and really internalize it, it opens the door to long-term, more sustained types of change. So I've been looking at how do I build circles and kind of targeted questions into these trainings to teach people how to have difficult conversations around abuse instead of just throwing information at them.
That is so awesome. I feel like you are speaking our heartbeat right now, because we agree. We are so passionate about leadership being transformed. And like you said, we've actually had people come to us and say that love our work, that have experienced it. They're like, how can we promote you? Can I connect you with like this big institution or this entity or this person at this organization? And, you know, we're like, no, you need to send someone to our training, because if they have the experience, it's undeniable that they had the experience, and then they can go back into their environment and be the change in their environment. And by all means, if you want us to train more of your people so that there's more buy-in, then do that. You know what I mean? And so I think you're just hitting the nail on the head as far as like what it takes to get people to experience what you're talking about instead of telling them what it is. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And that's just everything in life, right? Like personal experience is what drives true, like, heart change and life change. It's not information. So not that information is not important, right? Obviously it is to some degree, but if we can combine those two things together, both kind of this experiential piece as well as this informative or cognitive piece, I think you just gain a lot more traction in a short period of time.
I agree. I think Jen and I were talking a little bit about this today, that when people have the opportunity to slow down and kind of self-reflect and have this moment for self-awareness and taking responsibility for how they're feeling about things, so many instances, I think specifically in these harder conversations for any leader, it doesn't even have to be the church, right? There's this fear or anxiety that bubbles up within them because they might not necessarily know what to do with it. And so we see naturally when leaders have this anxious feeling or sense of fear, they just shut down the conversation. And if you're facilitating circle, it's really creating that nice, safe container for them to work through things. But ultimately, what Jen and I have been talking about, when people can work through that anxiety, that sense of fear, and come to more peaceful resolution, they will then be capable of building justice routes that are just instead of injustice. Because it's really those fears that hold us back from being able to create environments where people can bear God's image in its fullest capacity rather than shutting it down. So I'm just so excited for what has happened in the last year and where you're taking this, because this is perfect. I love it.
Yeah, I echo everything you just said. I was just sitting here nodding my head over and over again, being like, yes, yes, that's so right. Yes. And it is, it's breaking. It's stepping past this like internal barrier we set up around uncomfortable situations and topics that feel very emotionally loaded. And it's how do we learn to have these conversations, because they're important and because we have to have them at some point, or we're going to react poorly when they do come up. So if we can teach people how to get comfortable talking about something that's inherently maybe uncomfortable, it's going to lead them towards a better response in the future, and hopefully a more proactive one.
I love it.
Oh, Hannah, I think I'm just trying to think of a final question. It's not on our list of questions we sent you, but I just feel like this is where the conversation's going. What do you, like, when you dream about what's possible inside of your work, what is the hope of what's possible in what you're bringing to the churches?
Man, that's a big question.
It's a big one.
It is a big one.
Maybe give us one nugget, whatever you can come up with off the top of your head.
Gosh, what's possible? I think I would love to see the church wrap around victims and survivors. I mean, if you have paid attention at all in the sort of the realm of like church trauma recently, there's a really big movement of people coming forward and talking about church trauma and kind of either untangling or going through their faith in a new way because of trauma they experienced inside of the church. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see that change, right? Like, I'd love to see less people experience trauma inside the walls of the church or re-traumatization. And I would love to see the church really humbly step alongside of them with a willingness to listen and to love and to support and to just integrate themselves in this beautiful way that isn't so defensive all the time, but that wants to learn, like to see the posture of the church change into one of compassion and one of listening. I think that's the end goal. That's the end game.
That's beautiful. Hannah, as we're closing out this podcast, is there anything you want our listeners to know about the House of Faith and Freedom? Here's your moment just to promote what you're doing, what you're looking for, and how people can find you.
Yeah. Right now I offer two avenues of training. One of them is sort of self-led, and that would be picking up a copy of my book, which is titled Ready Refuge. You can find it on Amazon, or you can go to my website, which is houseoffaithandfreedom.org. And then I have a series of training curriculums that break down some of the information in there a little more fully. I also do offer the in-person church trainings, which coming up this spring will be including the circles process in them. And if you're interested in that, also go to the website, and you can shoot me an inquiry about how to get your church trained in Christ-centered advocacy.
What a great conversation with Hannah. Please check out her website at houseoffaithandfreedom.org. Click on training and you'll find her Ready Refuge book. This is a cross-denominational guide for church leaders on intimate partner violence. I'm really impressed with the way Hannah is bringing this vision for God's church family and for those that have been victimized by domestic violence. And if you have any interest of connecting with Hannah, you will find all of her contact information on her website and again, her book as well. Well, stay tuned for next week, friends, as we continue these amazing interviews of how people are bringing restorative circles and transformative family mediation to their sphere of influence.